Episode 2 of Week 2 is upon us, Bucks fans, and the star of the show is here. He is the custodian of Canton, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, Uncle Ira, the King of Pasco County, and of course, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee D. Kemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. Ira, you are presented by Bill Curry Ford. Bill Curry Ford is Tampa's first family of Ford. That's where you go shopping for your automotive needs. Trucks, cars, bodywork, whatever it is, Bill Curry Ford is going to help every Buccaneers fan personally through General Manager Sean Sullivan. Top-notch service and care. You can email him, text him, whatever it is. He's Ira's friend. He's Ira's fantasy football opponent on Sunday, and he is ready to help you. It all starts at BillCurryFord.com. How are you, Sage?
I'm doing well, Steve. We love to hear from listeners and readers about their experiences at Bill Curry Ford. I saw General Manager Sean Sullivan, Steve, a couple of weeks ago when we picked our fantasy teams, and he said quite a few of Joe Bucks fan listeners, readers, have visited the showroom, hearing about it on our shows. Steve, I just got a message the other day that somebody went there and had a fantastic experience with Sean Sullivan. They are so relieved about the way he did business and made them feel at ease. And just tell them that Joe Bucks fan sent you. You'll get a discount on top of what he normally gives you. And
very important. I'm glad you mentioned that. I went to your Twitter feed, iKaufman76, and I saw the person wrote to you, and yes. You retweeted it and wrote back. And I actually attached that tweet to your column the other day, so everybody could see that this nice woman and I believe maybe her husband or her boyfriend, you know, they had their experience at Bill Curry Ford. Just totally random, shot you a note, said they met
unsolicited, Steve. Unsolicited.
Yeah, unsolicited. And they said they met you last year, so anybody can look at your column, which they should have read already and seen it. But BillCurryFord.com, we mean business when we recommend people there. Ira, Big Storm Beer. We're not even talking about watch parties because the next one at Big Storm Clearwater, the tap room, that's for the Denver game. It's road games with Ira at Big Storm. Big Storm Beer is Florida's best craft beer. I haven't found a better one, Ira, and I am drinking more beer. I don't know if that's good or bad since I've really gotten more exposed to Big Storm. I knew about them. I drank Big Storm beer, but now I've tried them all. Get to BigStormBrewery.com. That is where you can search by zip code and find out where you can get Big Storm beer near you all across Florida. They're in about 5 or 6 states. They sell a lot in Orlando. I know we have our good share of listeners in Orlando. Big Storm beer. Today I'm talking about the beer. Ira, we know you love the Tropic Pressure Florida Ale. What kind of beer did you have at the watch party for the Saints game? I never did ask you what you were drinking.
Well, I ordered a Tropic Pressure, and then some nice gentleman in the crowd got me a Brumosa, and the waitress said he wants to keep it coming. Now, of course, I was driving home that night, so I stopped after 2 or 3, Steve. Now, that's the difference between us, Steve. You focus on the fantastic craft beers. And, of course, Mr. DeKemper is our resident expert in that field. I focus on the menu. The pulled pork tacos are fantastic. The Rubens, we know about the Cuban. And, Steve, 3 strapping young Buck fans in the crowd were raving about the ribs. As a matter of fact, they ordered an extra platter and saved me a rib. I came by and tried it. It was fantastic. They're going crazy over the brisket. You cut it with a fork, and it falls off the plate. So I'm going to go through that menu like a blitzkrieg. Give me about a month, Steve. I'll try everything on that damn menu.
Well, they keep changing the menu, adding to it. So the bottom line is Big Storm Tap Rooms are in Odessa. That's the original location. The big flagship location with covered outdoor seating. If you want to fully distance and eat outdoors, covered. I mean, it's a structure covered. They're in Clearwater on 49th Street, BigStormBrewery.com. You can order online.
Plenty of parking. Not a problem.
All right, Sage, how are you? How are you feeling today? What's on your mind?
Sunday can't come soon enough, Steve. Can't come soon enough. They got to even this record at 1-1. They got to have a big day offensively against a crappy defensive team. I don't want to hear about all this young talent on the Panthers. They couldn't stop the Raiders. and the Raiders don't have the weapons that the Bucks have. So I think this is perfect timing, a nice tonic for the Bucks. We'll get to our picks later. The Bucks don't blow anybody out, Lee, so nobody's going to pick a Buck 24-point victory. But the schedule doesn't fall badly right now, coming off a disappointing week one effort. I'm very, very curious to see how Brady and some other Bucks respond to an off day. I think they will rise to the occasion, Lee.
If the defense shows up like they did last week in New Orleans, they'll do okay. I always cite this guy because I always think he comes up with interesting stuff. Michael Lombardi said the third down conversion rate the Saints had against the Bucks, I think it was 5 of 15. He said that's playing damn good football as far as the Bucks defense. Hey, if they can prevent the Panthers or hold the Panthers to getting third down conversions in the entire game, you got to like the Bucks' chances only because, A, the weapons, and, B, they should be in the game if their defense is playing well.
Lee, I don't think you gave the Buck defense enough credit the other day in our first podcast of the week. I don't.
Yeah, you're right. My only issue was when they needed to be dominant, they couldn't be dominant, and I guess that's being a little irresponsible possibly. You know, they did their job. They kept them in the game.
The one thing they didn't do, Steve, is take the ball away. And you got to put it in context. The Saints just sent the NFL record. 8 giveaways for a season, astonishingly low number. Don't forget, Breeze missed 5 games, and they still only turned the ball over 8 times in 16 games. So that's tough sledding, Steve, but, you know, from a Buck defense standpoint, they want to get those takeaways, and they didn't do that. Here's another chance with a relatively inexperienced quarterback in Bridgewater. Now, he doesn't throw a lot of picks either, Steve, and Bruce Arians, I believe, has gone on record this week lauding Bridgewater in that regard, Steve, saying that's why the Bucks had a lot of interest in him in the offseason.
Yes, Ira, and the defense played extraordinarily well in spurts, but when you don't force a turnover and you make key mistakes, well, that gets you a loss to a good team. And I think in general this year, at least for now, we're trying to come to this podcast and to our Bucks fandom with a Super Bowl sort of bar, with a playoff bar, with a, hey, this team is capable, this defense needs to be a defense that can win 11 games. And it wasn't at that bar yet, I don't think. So I think that's some of the angst or the, but it is still the Saints. It's still opening day. So here we are. As far as Arians talking about Bridgewater and turnovers, I asked him what was his assessment of Bridgewater, a new quarterback, new head coach, jumping in and having no turnovers and scoring 30 points. And he very quickly emphasized that, well, Bridgewater already knows his head coach, but that doesn't mean the other 10 guys on offense do. So, you know, they surprised, but they're not a great team, Ira.
You know, one thing that strikes me, Lee, and I don't think it's a coincidence, is who are the quarterbacks, you know, now maybe you say, well, there weren't that many available, but Rivers was out there too, Lee. And so who are the quarterbacks that Arians, in his mind, immediately when the season ended, gravitated towards? Well, it was Brady and Bridgewater. What's the common link? They don't turn the ball over, Lee, where Phillip Rivers does. Now, Phillip Rivers is a borderline Hall of Famer. The Mad Dog asks me every other week about Phillip Rivers, and I say that he's got, you know, a heck of a body of work and never gets hurt over a long period of time, and that counts. But Lee, Bridgewater and Brady, they don't throw picks, and it just shows you how, I would say, disgusted, absolutely disgusted and demoralized Arians was by the end of last season, finishing 7-9. With a team that he thought was a lot better than that.
He was disgusted, yeah, but I also remember the combine. He said, we can win with Jameis, and we can win with Brady. You know, it was, Steve, were you not the person who asked him, what quarterback do you want? And Harry said, Brady.
Yeah, I asked him, you know, if you could pick up the phone now and call somebody. And I wasn't expecting him to say Brady, but yeah, multiple times he said we can win.
Brady, I remember that.
Multiple times he said he could win with Jameis, and it's relevant, but it's old, but it's interesting.
Yeah, at that time they did not have a deal with Brady, so
sure
he's got to keep the Winston option up in the air. He can't close the door on that.
Yes, he said it right after the season, though, and back in January as well.
Yeah.
What's interesting is, we talk about interceptions, Ira. Quarterbacks in their first year with Arians, they throw interceptions like I drink beers. So we shall see. I mean, it was really interesting that Emmanuel Ocho, he's really, really good.
He's a rising star. He's a rising star over there.
I agree. And he obviously works for FS1 and Fox. And his brother has played for Arians for, 4 years? Played last year with the Bucks, reserve linebacker, played with the Cardinals. So I would guess that guy knows Arians' offense pretty darn well. And so I would also guess, I don't think I'm making a horrible assumption, if I make the next step and say, well, Emmanuel's getting good intel from his brother. I don't know if he was ripping Arians, but he was just talking about it. Hey, quarterbacks in their first year, they're going to throw picks with Arians.
Steve, one guy we haven't talked about much, and I'll just do it briefly, is Byron Leftwich. I don't think distinguished himself on Sunday. I want to see more imagination. I know that Brady's got a heavy hand in forging this game plan. I understand that, and I applaud it. For somebody with Brady's resume, you'd be a fool not to have let him have big input. But Steve, a little more imagination from Byron Leftwich. Let's see what he comes up with on Sunday.
I'm glad you brought that up, Ira. I was going to save this till later, but it's the one thing that really ruined my week after the Buccaneers lost. This was like sort of almost like a second loss to me, Ira, because it really just kicked me in the groin and made me upset. Last year, Ira, early October 2019, the Saints shut out Mike Evans, locked him up. It was the stunner. And Jameis talked about them clouding coverage to his side, and he was always getting clouded with the secondary, whatever. And after the game, Bruce Arians said, quote, "It was a poor job on our part. We've just got to do a better job of moving him around." And Arians emphasized that we have to move Mike Evans around, put him in different spots, make sure he gets his targets. Well, Arians goes on his Buccaneers show Monday night, and he says, quote, well, this is not an exact quote, but he says, "The Bucs did not do a good enough job of moving Evans around and doing more with him. It led to not enough targets." Now, that's the same thing the guy said 11 months prior, and that's a problem, Ira. He's the coach, and he also said on his radio show that Evans played, quote, "too many plays against New Orleans, and they would have liked to see Evans take about a third less snaps." Well, who the hell's in charge? I mean, the head coach can't say he shouldn't have played that much, so I don't really understand what's going on here. And this ties to Leftwich, if they didn't follow last year's credo of getting Evans moved around the field.
And Lee, who's reading these comments besides the three of us animals feasting on a carcass? Who's reading these comments? The Glazer boys. The Glazer boys. And I say that, and I don't think this is going to come into play, but if this offense struggles, Lee, for the first month, and right now it's only one game and you can slough it off, but if it's if it's a chronic problem, Lee, I don't think it's far-fetched to think that the Glazers have a little meeting with Mr. Arians himself.
Whoa, Ira.
And stress that he's got to get more hands-on, more involved. Now, we're not at that stage yet. We're not. And I think the offense is going to have a big day on Sunday. So I think it'll be a moot point. But, Lee, the Arizona Cardinals did not have any problem getting DeAndre Hopkins open for 14 freaking catches in his debut. And somebody could say, well, you can't double Hopkins. You got Larry Fitzgerald. Well, Lee, Larry Fitzgerald is not Larry Fitzgerald from 2008. When he was going crazy in a Super Bowl in at Raymond James Stadium. He's not the same player. Teams don't game plan for Larry Fitzgerald anymore. He's near the end of a Hall of Fame career. That's just the truth. Here comes Hopkins. Yeah. Everybody knew he's going to be the main option for Kyler Murray, and they can't stop him. Lee, they can't stop him.
Used to marvel about Larry Fitzgerald smoking Darrell Revis at Raymond James?
Yeah, that's one of the greatest double moves I've ever seen. Absolutely fantastic. Lee, if Hopkins can get open, despite being shadowed, why can't Evans? And to Steve's point, if Evans is playing too many snaps for Arian's satisfaction, what the heck does that say of what's going on behind the scenes at One Buck?
Well, you're leading me to a buffet here, Ira. You're setting me up for all kinds of stuff.
That's what I do, DeCapper. That's what I do.
First off, are you suggesting that possibly in the past, or currently as we speak, the Glazer family, and by the way, I don't know if we should call them boys anymore. I think they have children that are old enough to work for the team, don't they? Are you suggesting the Glazers, they actually sit down with Arians and go over game plans? Or have?
No, what I'm saying is they sit down with each other and discuss the foibles of this football team. And when they walked out of the Superdome and went their separate ways after Sunday's game, they were disgusted. And I think an honest assessment was the defense played better than the offense. And if it is a continuous problem, now it wasn't last year, guys, except for the turnovers. They scored 28 points a game. That's a very healthy number. And the defense was terrible through 10 games. But this year, with all these offensive new pieces, shiny new weapons, this offense has to get its act together quickly. And if it doesn't, I'm saying that the Glazers will have a meeting with Arians and suggest strongly he becomes more involved.
Wow, so you believe that maybe the Glazer family sat in Ed's backyard sipping rosé overlooking a vineyard and decided Arians needs to be more involved?
I don't think we're at that point, Lee, but I'm saying if it becomes a month-long problem, they're not going to sit still, Steve, and let this thing blow up without their input. They're not going to do that. What is this buffet you're talking about over there at the Kemper?
Well, that was a couple of things, that the Glazers get involved with the game plan, and the other was about Arians. Probably one of the things that maybe we're all overlooking. I heard Chris Sims on his podcast. He broke down the game, spent 20 minutes breaking down the game. And Sims, I think, you know, we talked about Emmanuel Ocho as being a rising star. I think Sims is pretty darn good. I don't know if he's a rising star anymore. He's pretty well established with NBC. But we tend to forget that Sims spent a year with the Belichicks. He was a offensive quality control guy. He was on the coaching staff. And he talked about Dennis Allen, the Saints defensive coordinator. And he thought Allen came up with some bizarre scheme to help take Evans out. And Sims kept emphasizing, because got to remember, he wasn't 100%. There was no question he was not 100%. And he thought that was a factor. But he goes, Dennis Allen, every game, if you play him a second game, he always does something that you've never seen before that almost takes out your best player. And he goes, and Evans is your best player. He's your best player on offense. He's your best receiver. And he said Dennis Allen was doing something weird. So that might be a factor as well.
Steve, I don't know if you heard it, but another point that he made, which was very interesting, is that the Saints' game plan defensively was to neutralize Brady in the things that he likes to do the most, which is sort of assuming that the Buck offense is going to take on the characteristics of the New England offense, which I think is a fair assumption. And Steve, by that token, he talked about taking away short passes over the middle of the field, and I think it worked in spectacular fashion, Steve, for the Saints, because, you know, those little passes to Edelman that keep the chains moving, and the short passes to James White that keep the chains moving, we didn't see a lot of that Sunday, Steve, and you know, I think the implication was that the Buck offense is going to look a lot like what the Patriots were fond of doing under Brady.
Let me switch you to some news, Sage, and not the kind that some of these talking heads have been making by screaming the sky is falling at the Buccaneers. Chris Godwin enters the concussion protocol on Wednesday officially, does not practice. And of course, he played Sunday. He was not taken out of the game, with anything significant. And he did a media interview on Tuesday. And NFL rules say that for players in the concussion protocol, they don't want them interviewed in case their mental faculties are not 100%. The union, the labor union, says it's not fair to interview a guy if he doesn't necessarily have his 100% wits about him. So that's the core of the reason. But Wednesday, the Bucks said, he was showing signs, so he is not playing. And, we just have to hope that it's not a lingering thing, that it's not super serious. Any concussion potentially is serious, but this is a real curveball, Ira. And, Mike Evans still rehabilitating a hamstring. Are you concerned, or is this just a big unknown for you?
You got to be concerned as a Buck fan. Lee, that's the scariest thing about concussions. They don't always manifest themselves immediately after a game. Lee, I got to assume, and I think it's fair to say that if Godwin had exhibited any symptoms, they would not have put him on a Zoom call Tuesday, Lee. I mean, that's just the way it is. That's common sense. Why would you do that? So by that, I'm saying, the symptoms didn't show up, and then they had to deal with it. And at this point, you don't know when it's going to end and could pop up again before the weekend. Yeah, it's a definite concern going into this game against Carolina. It doesn't mean that if Godwin doesn't play, the Bucks get an excuse for laying an egg against Carolina. Of course not. Lee, Scotty Miller played very well. And Evans is going to be healthy, you would think. And they got their tight end. So, Buck fans, the world's not falling apart if Godwin doesn't play against a newfangled Carolina defense that can't stop anybody. And by the way, the defense stinks against the run in particular. So if the Bucks' running game's ever going to get straightened out, Lee, this has to be the darn week to do it. They can't stop anybody on the ground. They couldn't do it last year. They changed all the defense, and Josh Jacobs had a big day against them last week. So this concussion thing is dicey, Lee. It's very dicey. And here is a player who, for 2 days following Sunday's game, looked like he was fine. And then all of a sudden Wednesday he wasn't fine, and there's no guarantee he's going to be ready for Sunday.
I'm not about to say that I'm an expert with concussions. That just sounded awfully weird to me that, he was good enough to pass all the protocols, and all of a sudden, poof, he's not. And by the way, I had heard that as far as interviews, I was told the reason why they don't have players do interviews with protocols isn't so much they might be goofy from being, have their brain scrambled and they accidentally let out a state secret. I had heard it's the lights. That if you have a concussion, you can't be around bright lights. And I heard that was the main reason. It's a health issue. When you have a concussion, bright lights is not good for your concussion. And so that's why they don't do any kind of media availability. I could be dead wrong, but that's what I was told.
Steve, I didn't notice anything about Godwin's Zoom call that would raise any eyebrows.
Well, look, we're not medical professionals. In-game, typically concussions are spotted by people who are assigned to look for those signs, as well as the officials. Now, they don't always spot them, and players don't always speak up. And, if just hypothetically, if Godwin hit his head and got the concussion with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter and nobody noticed it, well, he might have felt fine 5 minutes later. And then, he might have felt fine Monday, Tuesday, and all of a sudden he's having some maybe some blurred vision or some lingering effects that come up. So we just don't know. And on Wednesday, if you're in a concussion and it's brand new, then, you're suspect for Sunday. But like you said, Ira, they've got plenty of talent to beat the Panthers with missing just Chris Godwin. Another guy who appeared, Ira, on that injury list, who never appears on the injury list, or rarely, Donovan Smith shows up with a knee injury, limited participation. Doesn't mean it's serious, but, week one with a knee injury after a terrible game makes you wonder.
Gentlemen, he doesn't have a knee injury. He's got a strained ego. He's got a strained ego. It's not a knee injury. That's a classic. That's a classic. Now, look, I'm the guy that's been on this podcast for 4 years fighting tooth and nail against both of you gentlemen about Donovan Smith. I say he's average at best. On his best day, he's average at best. And you guys are telling me how he's top 10 and maybe top 5 and the durability.
No, nobody said that.
So, you know, I've never thought he was better than average. And if you can't replace him when anybody's better, you got to throw him out there. But going forward, they got to do something about the left tackle position, gentlemen.
Ira, we had a rough weekend in the sense of all of that Tropical Storm Sally and us being on the outskirts. And, you know, all that rain brings water, and water can bring mold. And if you have any kind of disaster or you mold in your home that you see somewhere, maybe near the garage or behind a sink or by a shower, what do you do, Ira?
You grab your cell phone, Stephen. You get your busy little fingers moving, and you immediately dial up the head signal caller in this area, Florida's Elite Restoration. They're going to come out, no obligation quote. They're going to tell you exactly what the problem is. It may not be a major thing, and if it's not, they'll tell you so. But if it is, you got to address it immediately, because this is one area of the house that can get really bad in a real hurry. Florida's Elite Restoration.
Yeah, they will respond immediately. That's key. 24/7. You can call them. They're going to get back to you within 2 hours. They will walk you through the process and also get out there with their thermal imaging cameras, no charge, figure out what's going on. You want to call them before you call your insurance company and, frankly, get screwed. These are reputable people. We know them. Josh Martin, the boss over there, they're a small company, but not too small to service the whole Bay Area and to still give you personal attention. So they're just the perfect place to call for any time you have fire, any sort of damage, and they're licensed mold remediation specialists. Get to Florida'sElitereStoration.com. And good news, Ira. You know, Florida's Elite Restoration, our buddy Josh, he is buying every single Buccaneers fan a beer at Big Storm Brewing Company for our watch party on October 25th, Sunday night.
Nice. Buccaneers
at Vegas against the Raiders and Chucky, and that's going to be, of course, all of our road games are at Big Storm Brewing Company in Clearwater, indoors, outdoors. Josh wants to buy everybody a beer, so how about that? And regarding the Panthers, Kawan Short, their stud defensive tackle, did not practice yesterday with a foot injury. That could make the run defense even worse, which would be exciting. But I got to bring this to you then, Ira, since you know, we're talking run game. Bruce Arians, also on his Bucks Total Access show, he really dove in deeper. We know he gave some post-game love to Rojo, but he jumped in even further that he loved Rojo against the Saints. Quote, he was very decisive. He played extremely well as far as the mental aspect. I wish we got a ball better to him on the screen pass. I think he probably would have scored. Tom was under a lot of duress on that play, but overall I think Roe, that's his new name, Roe, not Rojo. I think Roe ran the ball hard, and we got to do a better job blocking, especially on the perimeter. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the key is that one line, which is music to my ears, because it reinforces what I've been saying all the time since I joined Joe Buck's fan in July of 2016. Seems like eons ago. And I don't know how many times I've said it. I think it's a number. I think we're up to 111 times on this podcast. Can't this offensive line block for the run? Can't they? And Lee, if Arians is going to be so effusive about how decisive and hard Ronald Jones ran the football, and he ends up with a 3.9 average, what the heck does that say about the run blocking, Mr. DeKemper?
I'm done with the Rojo works hard crap. That's Harry High School nonsense. This is the NFL. I mean, roofers work hard. Plumbers work hard. It's about production. I'm a broken record about this. Production, production, production. I'm done with this. Show me. I'm not from Missouri, but show me.
I happen to think Jones played a pretty decent game. You don't, so we're on two sides on that one. But I'm not calling him the second coming of Emmitt Smith. I mean, I'm not doing that, of course.
No.
But what you don't want to acknowledge, what you don't want to talk about, is the collective efforts of these five plus the tight ends over the last 4 years being an utter failure in terms of run blocking, an utter failure.
I think, and I'm convinced that my idea of bad blocking is completely different than 98% of the public. My idea of bad blocking is really bad blocking, as in like, turnstile blocking, is like Kenyatta Walker, is like Jeremy Trueblood his last couple years with the Bucks. That's my idea of bad. I will never move off this platform in the sense that I don't know of any good running back that absolutely positively cannot gain yards unless he has a 5 yard wide hole to run through. Is there some 11th commandment that exists that I'm not aware of, that a running back can't have vision, can't break a tackle, can't get yards after contact? Must they always have 20 yards hole to run through to get production? That's just me. I mean, I remember seeing Walter Payton playing behind the likes of, Dan Jiggins. Dan Jiggins. He was horrible. Their offensive line, the Bears, were horrible, but he got yards. Now, I'm not expecting Ronald Jones to be Walter Payton, but gosh darn it, can't a running back say, you know what, I'm going to get yards. Don't worry about it, guys. I'm going to get the tough yards. Must they be like a child that has to be carried down the field virtually in order to get yards? I mean, I'm done with this.
Our valued third member of our podcast team, Stephen, is waiting for Barry Sanders to show up in the Buck backfield. It's not going to happen.
Just someone halfway decent. Someone that you could say, you know, I don't know if this guy's a Pro Bowler, but he's having a good year. Can we do that? What's wrong with that?
I'm going to ask this question directly. Steve, you've watched the films of this game three or four times. Is it fair to say that on several, not just one, on several of Ronald Jones's runs, he made additional yards that were not there initially? Isn't that true?
Ira, let me sum it up like this, okay? It's week one. I'm not freaking out about the run game yet. It wasn't deplorable. Saints have an excellent run defense. Jones didn't have a bad day. He didn't have a good day. It was okay. But we're striving with that Super Bowl bar again, and we need better than okay. Bruce Arians loves the guy as of now, so I expect him to get a ton of carries on Sunday, with maybe Fournette getting a series, maybe two if he shows up in that first series as spelling Rojo in the first half. So we're just going to plot it out. I'm just confused mostly by Arians, because he talked about how great Wirfs was in the run game, and then on the next breath, he's talking about how we need better blocking on the perimeter, and we know it can't be all Donovan Smith. It's just a little confusing, Ira. You hope that they have success this week, and then you can chalk it up to, well, the Saints are an excellent defense, and we're still evaluating this. So
right.
I can't go too crazy.
Listen, I'm getting a little weary of you two guys making excuses. You sound like Arians on Jameis Winston last year.
You're making excuses for Ronald Jones.
Hold on, gentlemen. Hold on. You know what's clear as day, guys? This is not my opinion. This was said by Bruce Arians, I believe, Sunday night after the game. So this is not the sage coming up with this. Their defensive line out-physicaled our offensive line. He said that, Lee. He said that. And looking at the film, I haven't seen that he rescinded that opinion. And how many years have to go by where this offensive line gets manhandled, Mr. DeKemper?
Well, how do you respond to the following? And Bruce Arians said this yesterday. Wirfs may have had seven bad plays. Otherwise, he played well.
That's one guy. One guy.
You can't run behind one guy? You can't run right? You can't run right tackle?
He said the tight ends did a lousy job, so Wirfs didn't get any help there from Gronkowski.
I love Steve's barometer for a player. Do you think that Ronald Jones is a top 20 running back?
Top 20? I'd say probably not.
In Steve's own words, then what are we talking about?
We're talking about an offensive line which has been subpar for 5 years. That's what we're talking about.
It's the same circus show we talked about all offseason. It's the same circus discussion. How do you have a crappy offensive line and be third in offense? It's not possible, Ira. It's not subpar. Exactly. You can't be number three in scoring in offense and have a subpar line and then get rid of your quarterback. That does not add up in the world of logic.
Well, they've tried all kinds of running backs over 5 years, Lee, and they can't get the job done.
Crappy running backs. I mean, I don't see any ex-Buck running back going out running for 1,200 yards.
Give me an average running back and a very good offensive line, and that running back will get 1,100 yards, Mr. DeKemper.
You can take a garbage running back. If you got a good offensive line, he'll get 900 yards. Here's the thing about the offensive line that I think all of us overlook. As Steve pointed out, the Bucs were third in offense last year. They had no running attack. This team is built to pass. Why would you get an offensive line that's built to run block when you're passing?
I want an O-line that can do both. Is that too much to ask?
Probably. This year, yeah.
We've spent a lot of time on this, and I don't want us to get bogged down. I'm just going to read one quote from a guy who's not prone to hyperbole, a guy who's been in the trenches, a guy who's not out there looking to throw big quotes out there to shock people. Anthony Becht, who's worked for the Buccaneers on their website, breaking down film on the Buccaneers radio network. He breaks down games for ESPN.
He was a good blocking tight end, too.
Excellent.
Good blocking tight end.
Excellent. Excellent blocking tight end and a very handsome man, as you believe.
That goes without saying, Isbits. Goes without saying. Yep.
After the game, he jumped on local radio and he said, quote, "It's an absolute travesty the way we run the ball." And he was talking about the run scheming that Arians just keep doing the same thing over and over again that doesn't work. So let's just leave it at that. There is other issues, Ira, when it comes to scheming. And that's a part here that the Bucs have to fix because it's just not flying. And now they have a different type of running back in the backfield that they haven't had in years. I want to see the scheming to get things just right for Leonard Fournette, who we know, the world knows. We don't know about Ronald Jones, but the world knows that Leonard Fournette can grind out 4.5 yards a carry and break, combining breaking one here and there. Let's see that happen. That'll give me a little more confidence.
You're right, and Brady's presence can help in that regard in terms of changing the play at the line of scrimmage, which I think he did on his quarterback keeper touchdown. That was not the original play. So you're right, Steve. It's a complex issue. We'll see going forward. If you can't run the ball against the Panthers well, then you got issues. You got issues.
And it very well could be that Arians has decided this is what we're going to do. We're going to throw the ball. If we can run, we can run. I'm not going to spend much time on it, but we're going to throw the ball. And last year that worked. So that very well could be that's just not a focus of Arians. Ira screams the offensive line. I scream the running back. We've both been screaming for years. And finally the Bucs get a running back, and here we are. Granted, it's the first week, but it very well could boil down to what Beck is talking about, that it's just not a run-blocking scheme, and it may just be a lack of focus from Arians. If you think about it, it makes sense. Go to your strengths. Don't fart around with your weakness. Go to your strength. And clearly, the Bucs' strength is throwing the ball. And obviously, that's where they have their established weapons.
Well, Steve, part of Brady's success in New England was his knack for play-action passes. And that doesn't work if the defense doesn't respect your running game. So, it's not like you got Patrick Mahomes over here. Where you don't have to run the ball, and even the Chiefs go out and pick a running back in the first round and gets 130 yards in the first freaking week. if the Chiefs can do it, you know, who says you got to be one-dimensional in this league? That's just silly.
Well, I'm thinking of it. When you mentioned Pat Mahomes, I got to admit, and I don't mean to insult you in any way, shape, or form. It's me personally. I get depressed when you talk about Cosmo.
When I talk about Cosmo?
Yeah, your pooch.
I didn't know I was talking about Cosmo, Lee.
Well, it came up when you mentioned Mahomes. The reason why I say that, first time in 50 years your Chiefs win a Super Bowl, and you get a brand new puppy while they're champions. You could have named him Patty. And I'm like, you dropped the ball. So every time I hear you talk about Cosmo, I got to admit, every time you mention Cosmo, I think to myself, he could have named him after Mahomes. He dropped the ball.
Cosmo Kramer, Steve, is one of the quintessential characters in sitcom history. And that's my nod to Michael Richards, who, by the way, can't get a job. He made a mistake. He lost control of himself one night in an L.A. nightclub. And his career is in the dumper ever since. And that's 20 years ago. And he can't crawl out.
That reminds me of the day back in 73 when you were spotted in a dress at Studio 54. But you survived, Ira. You survived.
Well, Jackie O liked me in that dress, and she complimented me.
All right, listen, happy thoughts. Devin White, this guy's oozing with confidence, Ira. He can't help himself. He's fired up. He says he feels fast and strong the way he hoped he would, and he's telling everybody yesterday that he played great and he's ready to dominate. And I think some of his energy is the kind of stuff that will help carry the Bucks from maybe falling into a deep hole like they're prone to early in the season. He's just one guy, but what do you think?
He brings a lot of swagger besides a lot of speed. He does bring a lot of swagger. He even had it as a rookie, you know, from the moment they drafted this guy. And I think it's part of the reason that he was on Jason Light's radar with the scouts to the degree that he was, is the confidence level that he had in himself. I think that was an attractive quality for the Bucks, and they saw him as an instant leader. And I don't think they're wrong in that regard. In about 2 years from now, 3 years, this is going to be Devin White's defense, gentlemen. I feel pretty confident about saying that. And you can just see it. And now his play is starting to match the swagger, matching the talk. He played very well. And by the way, Steve, you watched that film three times. I've watched it once or twice. Boy, it sure looked like Todd Bowles was sending his two inside linebackers on quite a few blitzes against Drew Brees. It looked like a pattern. They didn't always get to him, but the idea was to move him off his spot. And you would think that would leave a hole in the middle of the field for Alvin Kamara, but they covered that up as well. Excellent game plan by Bowles. Boy, David and White were very effective, Steve, coming on that pass rush to supplement the fact that they were taking Shaq Barrett out of that game.
Yeah, well, their speed was really evident, and hopefully, you know, Lavonte David at his age doesn't get dinged up a little bit, and Devin White doesn't get dinged up like he was last year, but their speed was really showed up on the blitz and elsewhere. Just, yeah, they looked like the linebackers everybody expects them to be, and, you know, it's very, very exciting. Bruce Arians also said on his show, Ira, that he wants O.J. Howard, quote, more involved, and maybe that'll be interesting, especially if Chris Godwin, even if he plays, typically Godwin often is in the mix, in motion, comes down and blocks in the running game, and you would think a guy who's had concussion issues, they will keep Godwin away from his normal blocking. So maybe they change things up a little bit with the game plan. You know, who knows? But O.J. Howard has the coach's love right now.
Well, he's got the love, but not necessarily as a blocker, because he didn't certainly exclude O.J. Howard, Lee, from when Arians talked about his disappointment with the blocking at the tight end position, and Howard took his fair share of snaps, Lee. So obviously, you know, he didn't excel in terms of blocking and helping Wirfs on Cam Jordan, and that could be another reason why Arians thought Wirfs played so well, is the his help wasn't that great. So we'll see about O.J. Howard. You know, we rip Leftwich for designing plays and showing more imagination, but that Howard touchdown, Lee, That was a beautifully designed and executed play.
When it comes to O.J. Howard, is it fair to say that maybe we've seen enough of him trying to block? And maybe it's not smart to rely on his blocking. Would that be fair? I mean, he's a hell of a pass catcher, don't get me wrong. And I hope the Bucks somehow find a way to keep him. But is it fair to say that, you know what, he's not Dave Kasper?
I don't think he's an overly physical tight end, despite his chiseled body and, you know, his bulk. Steve, I don't see the blocking from O.J. Howard. Am I missing something?
Well, it's, again, one game. You know, maybe his improvement's there. But, no, he's not a special blocker. And like Lee said, maybe, you know, year four, maybe it's time to realize that, that's what he's going to be. But, again, one game and, you know, Gronkowski was rusty. And, you know, they say Gronkowski's blocking is going to rub off on these guys. They're always looking for something to rub off the Bucs. I'm kind of sick of that.
Let's hope it's not the COVID.
yeah, not the COVID. Ira, a little bit of fun. The yesterday I wrote about Erin Andrews. Erin Andrews appeared on Rich Eisen's show, and she sort of shared. I'm glad I stuck the segment out to the very end, because at the very end she shared one of her chats in the pre-production television meetings that Fox has, that Tom Brady went out of his way to say that Scotty Miller is a guy that America doesn't know about, but they're going to know who he is by the end of this season. And so I wrote that up, Ira, and you know, hey, you know how it goes. These sometimes players slip and give a little extra that they wouldn't on a press conference to the guys covering the game. So I wrote it up, and 10 minutes later, Erin Andrews is sending us a tweet commenting on the story, how she would like a little bit more clarification on it, because she didn't like the way something was phrased. And I very politely said, you know, that's what you said, and thanks for reading. And then she writes back, Of course I read. I'm from Tampa. So she tells the world, there are 3 million followers or whatever, that she reads Joe Bucks Fan. And we went back and forth. I did end up changing a couple of words to make her happy. And we did ask her if she wanted to say hello to you, and she did. So I'm passing that on if you missed it.
Yeah, you know, 20 years ago, I did the Lightning for the 2000-2001 season. They were terrible. They were awful. I think they got maybe 50 points, and now they get 100 points. And back then they were getting 50 points in 80 games. That's not a good season, gentlemen. Not a good season.
No.
And Erin Andrews was part of the coverage team. She was working, I think, for Fox, and she was with the team the whole year. And so I'd see her all the time on the team plane and practices and games, of course. And I knew she was going to make it big. I didn't know it was going to happen that fast for her, but she works hard. She's a hard worker, takes her craft seriously. And Steve, I'm very glad that she is a avid follower of Joe Bucks Fan. That shows she's got good taste too.
Well, see,
Ira, when you started your story with 20 years ago, I thought it was going to get a little steamy, but
Nah, come on, man. Lee, I've been married since 81 over there, DeKemper. I've been kept in the closet for 40 years. Come on now.
Here's something that I know. Anyway, it must have been borderline silent there. I know Arian had said something along the fact that you could have a conversation with someone across from the field. It was that the crowd noise was that low. When I was at the scrimmage at Raymond James, the Den of Depression, it was pretty loud, the crowd noise they were piping in. It was a, you know, practice session for everybody because there was no preseason. So I was a little surprised that they didn't pipe in louder crowd noise. But Erin Andrews said, you know, again, Arian said you could have a conversation with someone across the field. Well, Erin Andrews said what people heard and saw on TV was not what was going on at the stadium. That was Fox production piping in the fake crowd noise. That was not the stadium. And Erin Andrews said at one point, you know, they pipe in this racket, hype music or whatever throughout the game. Every stadium does it. And Erin Andrews, she was on Kyle Brandt's podcast, and she was talking about how at one point in the game, they were piping in some song, and she started singing along with it. And she goes, usually you do that at game. No one hears you. And she starts singing along, and all of a sudden she stopped like, whoa, I'm singing over Sean Payton calling plays. And she had to stop real quick, and she's like, got embarrassed. And she looked around. She, I hope I didn't, you know, insult anyone here. That's how low it was. She said it was weird. And I remember Belichick this week. It was classic Belichick. Someone asked Belichick, he's like, there's no crowd noise, you know, at these games. Does it remind you of anything? And deadpanned, he's like, practice.
The best visuals Erin Andrews created talking about the stadium was, she said that she was really planning to watch the teams run out of the tunnel. Tom Brady coming out for the first time in a Bucs uniform, and Drew Brees, and what that looked like. She wanted to make a note of it as her sideline duties. And she said she was looking at something and whatever, and she missed it. That's how quiet it was. She missed the team running out of the tunnel onto the field. No, because nobody cheered. Nobody, it was nothing. So really bizarre.
Well, Erin Andrews was talking about with Kyle Brandt that after Brady threw his interception, and this was an example she had of how you would never, ever hear this during a game, especially at the Superdome, no matter if you're on the sidelines or not. She said Brady came off the field just, I mean, you could hear the echoes. F. He was just so PO'd about throwing his first pick.
It's kind of like Ira when he's out of tater tots.
Oh, he doesn't get his ribbon?
Yeah, no more tater tots. That's Ira at Big Storm. All right, Ira, prediction time. Prediction time, Ira. It's an alert. High alert. Sound the alarm. Prediction time. What is going to happen in Sunday's game? I'm going to start with Lee. Because, Ira, you might not be ready since I mentioned food. Lee, Panthers, Buccaneers, give me a score. Give me something to look for.
30-17 Bucks. The offense breaks out, and Leonard Fournette damn near gets 100 yards rushing.
Sage?
I like that. Well, the Bucks rarely blow anybody out, so I can't go with that. I'm going to say... I'll say 34-24. McCaffrey's going to do something on Sunday. You can't hold that guy down every time you play him, and he was in peak form week one. 34-24 Bucks, and Brady shuts up his skeptics.
Well said, Ira. Well said. You know what? I'm going to go 24-20 Buccaneers. If they can't be 4 points better than the Panthers in Tampa with Tom Brady, then I don't know what to say. So I'm just going to leave it at that. They should be able to run the football, but regardless, the offense should be effective. There's enough there. Brady's healthy. They got some kinks out. I don't care if Chris Godwin's not playing. You know, put up 24 points. If the defense plays like it did last week, they should win the game. So we're all in. All three of us are all in on the Bucs this week. They cannot lose, Ira, right?
One morose podcast next week if things go awry Sunday. I don't think it's going to happen, Lee. And the 1-1 Bucks will be hitting the road, going to Denver, and we'll have another watch party, gentlemen.
Bill Curry Ford presents the podcast, BillCurryFord.com. That is where you go to start your shopping 24/7, Bill Curry Ford. And the name to remember is Sean Sullivan. He is the general manager. He will help you personally. Email, text, call, walk in, whatever you got to do, you can reach Sean and he'll guide you. He's not looking to sell you something you can't afford or pressure you into anything. He just wants to help Bucks fans, and fans are taking advantage. BillCurryFord.com. Big Storm Beer, Ira, as we talked about, it's about the beer. Big Storm Beer, Florida's best craft beer. Just try it. The Bramosa, Key Lime Shandy, so many great beers. The classic Wavemaker Amber Ale. Get to BigStormBrewery.com and Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration, that's your first call. If you've got water in your home that shouldn't be there, you find some mold, it's the time of year for that. And high alert, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Sage, I'm going to throw this last one at you as we get out of here, because it just sort of, in some ways, highlights the silliness that we dealt with from the national media all week long after hearing them declare Tom Brady the ultimate savior for months. Tiki Barber, who admits on air, and this week admits on air on CBS, that Bruce Arians is his favorite coach. They've known each other since Barber was a toddler and Arians was his babysitter. He says Tom Brady looks old and immobile, and he feels bad saying it, but that's the deal. Old and immobile, and, you know, the first time he's ever said Brady looks washed out.
Steve, you're talking about the same guy who says Saquon Barkley's not a three-down back. I mean, how crazy is this? You know, some of these guys, they can't handle the players that come after them. Look at Sapp. He's ripping on Sue and Vea before the season even starts. The number one rushing defense, and those two guys are primarily responsible for that last season. But they played Sapp's position, and nobody who ever plays defensive tackle for the Bucs is ever going to be good enough in Sapp's eyes. So, you know, some of these talking heads, the Deion Sanders of the world, Michael Irvin, you know, they love making these grandiose statements. I want to hear Tiki Barber after Brady throws for 320 and three touchdowns on Sunday. I want to see him recant his words. You don't turn on a guy with six Super Bowl rings after one game. You just don't do it.
Amen, Sage. Amen.